Today is Monday, the 1st of August, 2011. My name is Micah Marty, and I'm here to interview you about your spouse's experiences through the Forerunner experience, as well as your own a few years later, and just to have a conversation with you about what this meant at the time, and what this means now, and what you remember about it, so we can record this. So if you could just start off by saying your full name, and perhaps your spouse's full name, and we'll get into the story from there.
Okay. I'm Bill Flath, William E. Flath, from Canada. Mm-hmm. I was an ordained pastor when I first heard about this from southwestern Saskatchewan.
Okay.
And I had met Joanne Johansson here at the village. I think perhaps our context is slightly different than the original Forerunners.
Okay.
My recollection was that we had been here in 1962. I think quite a number of the Forerunners were here in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how the overlap had taken place. There were several of the Forerunners who were involved in the hiking trips that we had taken.
Mm-hmm.
I had come here as one of the this Stehekin group, which was a group of young adults from throughout the states and Canada, coming together from the 20s and 30s in age group. So this was the first retreat of that type and gave us an opportunity to meet other people our age throughout the country.
Okay.
And then my first recollection with Joanne was she was the registrar.
Okay.
And I think there were about 35 registrations for that young adult Stehekin retreat.
Okay.
And while the hustle and bustle was going on there to get their rooms and everything else, I stood back and I have to confess, I was captivated
mm-hmm.
with the operation of the registrar. For me, it was not just the registrar doing her thing. I was watching the way she was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it was a revelation to me.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I found that she was, it seems to had a Swedish background from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
But she had hazel eyes from her Finnish background in the family. And what struck me was the poise with which she had been able to do her work in all of this, the attention to duty, the expertise in giving them their bills and collecting the funds and assigning their rooms. It all seemed to be something that she just undertook, and she did with a kind of quiet, gentle friendliness. And it seemed that it set the pattern for us in terms of, you know, the kind of function that takes place in a place like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of my first impression and introduction to her as a person.
Okay. So Joanne was her first summer up here in 1962?
I believe so. You see, I couldn't quite connect how it worked with the Forerunners in 61,
mm-hmm.
because I think that in 1962, when I was here, some of those people were with us on the
mm-hmm.
on the hiking trips.
Okay.
My understanding was that she came mid-June. She was a teacher.
Okay.
She had a teacher friend from Minnesota, and the both of them had come here together. And I think the other teacher had sort of started with the secretary's work. But Gilbert, who was the director of the place, had approached Joanne because he could see that she was very good with people, and she had the experience that made a secretarial office workable.
Okay.
Her mother was a restaurant operator, and she was waitress there, so she knew how to deal with the public, with finances, and all the other functions there. So she seemed to step in, and it almost became a natural for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Okay. So it was my understanding was that she had come that first month, stayed on with the young adults retreat that we had had as a registrar and as a participant in the activities
okay.
that had taken place.
Okay, cool. So you first came also in 62.
Yes, I had come here in 62.
And what was your impression of the village at that point? What were you expecting?
Well, what I was really expecting, and you see, I had been involved in some of the youth activities. I'd gone to the International Youth Convention in Miami, Florida, and I think through those contacts, I had access to their a youth newspaper, One, which was sent also to our American Lutheran Church as well as the Augustana Church.
Okay.
And I got to know about the place, and what I was really looking for was simply to have a vacation place
mm-hmm.
that was kind of removed from parish life so that you could get a real refreshing break.
Mm-hmm.
And this seemed to be the ideal situation for that. So it came primarily as a place apart, renewing, and meeting friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's kind of where what it was advertised
mm-hmm.
For.
Sure.
I was fortunate to have a Lutheran pastor from Oregon as a neighboring in the neighboring parish, and we got together, and I talked to him about this. And had indicated I didn't know where it was or how I would get there. And he says that's not a problem because he, living in Oregon, he could go past the Holden, you know, Lucerne, and drop me off and then pick me up at Space Needle in Seattle.
So and you're going to hike through?
So, no, rather than hiking through, a number of people, and I think some of the forerunners also had, once this event was over, there was a whole group of them that had headed out to Seattle, and I just hitchhiked a ride there with them.
Okay. Huh. So how old were you when you first came to the village?
Okay, I think it was about 26 at the time.
Okay.
I was an ordained pastor and I had served the congregation, and this was into my fourth year that I was there. So I started very early into the parish ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Joanne was about 24 or 25. When we later on, we did get married, and she was 25, I was 27, so that was a year later.
Okay. Cool. So, so you were looking forward to a place where you could meet people and you could find solitude, perhaps, as well as spiritual connection, a place where you could live in a Christian lifestyle, in a Christian community.
Yes.
And how long was your visit planned for?
I think it was a 1 week retreat.
Okay.
I think part of it was what I think the primary kind of activity was the hikes.
Okay.
They were really an awesome part of the event here, but there were also some times when I had taken breakaway times for reflection. I went up back at behind the chalets, there was a big stump there. Mm-hmm. Just as evening came, a deer came next to me, and I contemplated the idea of how can we as young people come together with an openness to friendship that is not imposing or, you know, sometimes we can get onerous to somebody, as somebody else do, but that we could enter in with an openness and friendly atmosphere to be able to explore the possibilities of that life offers. Mm-hmm. And I even wrote a poem and put a copy of it under Joanne's doorpost.
Do you remember the poem?
I can't remember the poem now. I do have it in my records back home. But it was roughly in this, how do we enter into friendship relationships that are open and unimposing? I think that's kind of the idea. And there was one of the forerunners in 1961, I believe, as well, from Saskatchewan, Canada, Marie Krell.
Okay.
And I knew her quite well.
Okay.
And later on, she had said that when Joanne got that poem, she says, who is this kooky Canadian who writes poetry and puts it under strangers' door? And I thought afterwards, boy, did she have me labeled right from the start. But the thing that really impressed me, that even though I had to admit it was a sort of a kooky thing to do, you know, but it was not a put down. It was a question. Mm. You know, we had very little opportunity really to get together personally. We sometimes, you know, meal times or after devotions or something like that, we had a few conversations. And again there, it seemed to me, I was so impressed with her perspectives, because she had shared that having come to Holden here opened her life to being free enough that she could explore any avenue, any place, for whatever potential it possessed. In fact, she said that she was going to change places in her teaching, and she spread out a map, closed her eyes, and her finger landed on Milwaukee in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And that's where she had gone to teach.
Wow.
And so that's part of phase two of that relationship, because that gave opportunity for us to reconnect.
Mm.
But at this point...
Why were you in Milwaukee?
Because it was the National Convention of the American Lutheran Church.
Oh, okay.
And I was the alternate delegate. So I gave myself the excuse to be there. But that's another story. Right. What happened here, I think probably one of the highlights was we did make shorter shorter trips into the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And one was up to Copper Basin.
Mm-hmm.
And Joanne was with us on that trip, but I think it pretty well was the maximum of her endurance. But for us, these smaller trips were sort of preparing us for the big trip that they had planned. We had gone right up to Image Lake.
Oh, wow.
And that was, and that in itself was really, a very significant event or story. Because in our planning for that, there was one very tiny blonde girl with just an absolutely beautiful voice, and she had a heart condition, and a doctor had warned her he had said that there was no way that she could take the trip because she would never make it back alive. But and everybody tried to convince her that her life was that important.
Mm-hmm.
to take care. Well, as we made the plans in the morning, And what again here I have to pay tribute to the forerunners, because they not only came here and made the place operable in terms of where we stayed and where we ate and where we had our devotions and our recreations, but they also opened up the paths and made the preparations. Mm-hmm. We had our food supplies, all things that we needed for the hikes were all prepared, that we could pick them up and run with them. And I think that was that just opened up the whole week for us. Mm-hmm. Well, we started that morning while we were making the preparation. This girl disappeared, and we scoured the place all over the place, and she was nowhere to be found. So then we decided, well, we just have to go ahead with the trip as it was. So after dinner, we set out, went as far as Heart Lake. I think it was even further than that. There was a cabin further down the road there, and we got there towards evening, and there we found this little girl waiting for us. She had skipped away because she knew that if she would have waited, there was no way that she'd have been out. Well, then once she was out there with us, then I think the whole group kind of felt, well, why don't we take it on a project in helping her along the way? So we carried her knapsack, and when the climbing was higher, we held out our hands and assisted her up, and some of them even came behind and gave her a push from behind, and every way that we could. Sometimes she lagged behind a certain distance, and then we would deliberately, where there was a flatter plane, we would deliberately stop and let her catch up with us. And in that way, little bit by little bit, she was really quite winded, I think, partway up that, because it was a steep climb, mm-hmm. Up over what was called Cloudy Pass. Mm-hmm. But little bit by little bit, we could see that she was getting into a pace where her breathing wasn't quite as labored, but it was more consistently renewing her. And then finally she got her pace where she was able to carry on with us. We stayed overnight at this cabin and had our sleeping bags and just sprawled them all over the place. I think there were somewhere in the teens of the group that we had. Mm-hmm. And then the next day we made it right up to Image Lake, and in the evening we settled down near the lake with which mountain is it right across?
Glacier.
Glacier Mountain. And that was, it was just a sight to behold, to see that, with the setting of the sun and the darkness, and that was still aglow, mm-hmm. there before us. So we had our meal there, and then to bed down, we all planned to a place to sleep where we had our sleeping bags in close proximity to each other. And fortunately, the forerunners had thought of it and got a big plastic sheet, put it over the whole bunch of us so that we were all covered. Mm-hmm. And then we slept under that, so that the dew in the morning was just heavy dew, so we were dry under that. And in the morning when we got up to make breakfast, we had to chip through a sheet of ice on the lake there, so it was a chilly night. But under that kind of conditions, together under that dome, we were comfortable. Mm-hmm. So that was, I think, kind of a refreshing thing to go that far off the edge and find it, to be renewing. Mm-hmm. I think we took our time to get going because of, the beauty of the setting and so on, but we started off quite early in the morning, and I remember coming just over the crest from Image Lake, where you could begin to see the trail, and I even have a picture as coming over the crest and taking, seeing the pathway going down all along, and there was Heart Lake as big as a fog that you could put around your neck. Mm-hmm. And we thought, once we arrive there, we'll be able to make it home. So, and the other thing that really struck me at the time was, I think it was George Beverly Shea with the Billy Graham Crusade, who began to familiarize that Swedish hymn that was translated into English, mm-hmm. How Great Thou Art. Mm-hmm. And when it came, we had memorized that and sang it all along the way, and coming down there, when I looked down from majestic mountain grandeur and hear the birds and feel the gentle breeze, mm-hmm. That whole idea, we were living it and we were part of it, and so the song became our own experience, it gave us that sense of the grandeur of God and the creation before us, the climb down was probably easier than going up, but we had to go the full distance, and I think, if I remember correctly, the total distance from the camp up to Image Lake and back down was 29 miles in the 3 days, and we had to go the distance from the top of it down on the same day.
Oh, wow.
And so by the time we got down to Heart Lake, we were already just sort of dragging ourselves along, but we says, when you look from there, we weren't that far anymore. So that gave us the encouragement to sort of carry on. We got back down, and I think it was really close to around the supper time hour, and I don't even remember the supper time, because we were just so weary, we just threw ourselves into the grass and just lay down and just tried to renew our energies. Mm-hmm. And then that evening they had an outdoor they had an outdoor worship service.
Okay.
And part of the worship service was that forerunners who were at the camp base had made out a plan that as part of the worship service they had a foot washing ceremony. And there was nothing more humbling and more refreshing in all my life than that experience of having aching, tired feet being refreshed by gentle hands and cool water.
Absolutely.
So,
wonderful.
And then I think sort of as a climax of that evening, this little blonde girl gets up and she sings, climb every mountain, ford every stream, follow every rainbow till you find your dream. And again, it was, she had lived it and she shared the living expression. And that was just so moving that I think we were all moved to tears. Just in the rejoicing that she had come back, that she still has enough energy to share that song with us.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that was an incredible experience mm-hmm. for us. Yeah, so,
wow.
So that was one thing. I think there was another episode which I think is along this way. While we were here, and we were warned that we should not go on trips by ourselves because some of the trails were still not ready, they would be at risk. And one early one morning, a couple went up the mountain just across from the Holden village here. They wanted to see a lake beyond the mountain edges. Mm-hmm. And just before noon, the fellow came running down the mountain. He says his girlfriend had fallen off a cliff and she wasn't able to move.
No.
And so we immediately developed a rescue crew. And Fern Ventura was one of the persons in that rescue crew. John Hill was another one. And we were up there, and of course it was starting to go into the afternoon, and the progress down the mountain, it was very steep, was very, very risky. So John was taking care that no other person should be hurt in the process. Mm-hmm. And it was going quite slow. And so Vern came over to me and she says, is there any way we can speed up the process? He says, she is suffering hypothermia, and we need to get her down as fast as we can if she's going to make it. They had phoned out for a helicopter, just had that one connection there. So then we developed the process, and I says, John, this is maybe just a little bit much for one to do. I says, I'll get another crew, and while you're taking her down one level in the stretcher, I will set the people up in line so that as soon as you bring her to this level, this next crew will be able to take her and bring her down to the next level while you people go down there and set up the crew for the next. And that hurried up the process. We got here, and it was getting sort of towards the last bit of the daytime when the helicopter came. We just arrived at the base here when the helicopter arrived. Wow. They picked her up and took her to a hospital somewhere, and she was okay. Wow. But that was just a sort of a traumatic event.
Yeah.
That took place while we were going.
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. So some of those things are for us. And so, you know, while the place is, you can't say it's an ideal paradise, it was just such a wonderful setting where we could do this, and we could engage both the highs and the lows, the joys and the risks, and we found ourselves being so uplifted that we could be together mm-hmm. in this kind of adventure. But to me, what really made it workable was these people who were the forerunners who made all that available.
Well, yeah.
You know, wasn't it? You know, somehow, I don't know who did it, mm-hmm. but was it Fern or whoever it was? They found where the stretcher was, where the ropes were. They got all that together so that we could take what they had put into our hands and make it work.
And Marie Krell from Canada.
Okay. Oh, is that right? Marie Krell was a very good friend of mine.
Yeah, she was a nurse. Or a nurse in training, perhaps.
You know, oh, I see.
They
yes.
Were young
enough, yes.
And maybe they hadn't graduated. But
right, right.
She
I was best man for her sister's marriage hmm. and met her there. I didn't know that she was here mm-hmm. as part of that event mm-hmm. until that happened. Mm-hmm. And then she told me the comment that Joanne made when I got carried away a little bit with my poetic outbursts. You heard about that, didn't you?
No, your poetic outbursts?
Yeah, right. Well, I sat in the backwoods there trying to figure out this whole business of interrelating relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a poem and put it under Joanne's door
mm.
and then apparently Marie Krell had told me later, she says Joanne had says, who is this kooky Canadian who writes poetry and puts it under people's
right. In love.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, I have to admit though that I really didn't do very good progress here.
Mm-hmm.
because there was, of course, you knew John Hill. And I think she was very much enamored with...
Oh, all of us were.
Yes, that's it.
An imposing figure.
Yes, right. And he was. That's right. Every event, he was an imposing figure. He took the lead in our hikes.
Well, he's quite a bit older than some of us.
Right.
He had been in the military, in the Navy, or some, I don't know which, perhaps.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Already.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
That's
right. So when he was giving her the goodbye hugs when we took off from here, all my hopes and aspirations were just brushed aside with a brush of his beard across her face. And all that I garnered was a hesitant handshake and a reluctant address to her home, where she was going to be there for only a couple of weeks before she took off to work in Milwaukee. So,
how'd you turn that around?
That's story number two. I can tell it to you, but I, at least I wanted to get, what I really wanted to do in coming here was to tell her story. You know, we were married, and she had passed away close to 4 years ago, and I thought in coming back, her story needs to be told as well. And I think that the part that she had in developing the office and doing all the registrations and those kind of things, I think was also a base in an arena that she could work with, just like the rest of you could work in the arena, the outdoors, to get things together. Mm-hmm. Okay?
That's wonderful.
Right. Want to go into stage two?
Sure. Let's just touch base really quick here.
Yeah.
You're Sonia?
Sonia, yeah.
And
John is his boss. He's not at work before.
Right, okay. Just so you know, we're recording right now.
Oh, fine. No,
you are welcome to pitch in, but it's on the record.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. And I really appreciate this, and I still don't quite know how this all fitted together. I appreciate the forerunners being here, knowing that they came in 61, but how it was that there were forerunners here in 62 when we had that Young Adults Retreat.
Well, they had the option of coming back if they wanted to, I guess. I didn't come back, but I know that there were some that came the following year.
Yeah. Because Jim Weiberg had said that he was back. I know that John Hill had been back.
Okay.
Because I think that Joanne was here only in 1962. I'm not so sure about that, but I think that was... And she was about, well, she was 24, 25. Yeah, so mm-hmm.
What was her name?
Joanne Johansson.
Yeah, she's not in the original list.
Okay, that's right. So we were sort of the in-between thing, so we really don't fit into the original list of the original forerunners.
Well, that's fine.
But we thought that we would put in this aspect, because I think this was another stage in the development of what Holden Village came to be. Mm-hmm. You know, so... and then, of course, it expanded from there. But, you know, the fact that we were able to explore together and for her to say, you know, Holden Village has given me the freedom to be able to explore any place I might be able to go and anything that I might be able to do. Mm-hmm. And that's how she had chosen her place of teaching. Mm-hmm. And what happened after that, and I guess I can go into stage number two now, is I went back to my parish in Hodgeville, Saskatchewan, southwestern Saskatchewan. When I arrived, there was a call waiting for me to Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I thought, well, you know, if I make that kind of a trip, it'll take me close to 1,000 miles closer to where I live. I shouldn't have really thought of that because it was only a casual acquaintance. But that kind of inkling was always there. So So when I got, you know, got that call, they made a comment in that, in the calling process. We had hoped that we would get a married pastor because our last pastor was a bachelor and he became an alcoholic. And so we had hoped that we would be able to get a family person, but I guess you won't do. So I thought, well, if they can be that brazen about it, maybe I can. So I says, all right, I appreciate your honesty. Now, let me tell you, I do have another option, another opportunity open to me. I am the delegate in case the first one would not be able to go. And I have an opportunity to go to the Milwaukee Convention. The person who was serving the congregation I got a call to was a good friend of mine. He had done his internship there. So the two of us got together and we went to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But when I sent that note to the church and they responded, by all means, then immediately I sent a letter to Joanne at her home place, just 2 weeks involved in the process there. And she had told me later that she had read the letter, left it on the living room table. Her mother saw it there and says, what's this all about? And, well, there's this Canadian who wants to come and see me because he's going to the church convention in Milwaukee. And her mother says, well, what could be the harm in that? So it was at her mother's bidding that she sent a letter to my home, because as soon as I left here, I went to say goodbye to my family. And within that 1 week, the day before I left, I received her letter giving me her Milwaukee address and phone number. So that's all we had. Came down there, and as soon as I arrived, I phoned, and she says, well, how about if we meet after school? She was engaged in that. But she says, you'll have to be here promptly as school is out, because the school is in a ghetto area, and it is extremely volatile. They have a policeman full-time in the school that she teaches, and they were not to deal with any conflict situations. If a conflict arose in the class, all they would do was press a button, buzzer, and the policeman would come and deal with those kinds of things. So that was the kind of volatility. So I left the convention early, and I found this school, and I watched from every side. It was the north end that I was supposed to pick her up.
Well,
but
you were
smitten,
weren't you?
Oh, but I didn't want to let on, because I was just one of those casual persons, because all I had was a casual handshake. Anyhow, I waited there for over an hour, and I thought, my goodness, did I miss it somehow? So I went and drove out to her place there. She opened the door with a small crack like that and said, in a cold voice, where were you? Huh. I had gone to the wrong school. Huh. And she says, I had to walk 15 blocks through the ghetto area by myself. Huh. And that, of course, I thought for sure that would be the end of that. And so I had to admit that it was a terrible thing for me to have done that. First of all, I had learned one thing from it, that I would never again read a map without clearly identifying where I went, because apparently I had taken the wrong street to the wrong school. And I says, that I feel terrible about in having done that to you. And I says, and I know how much risk I had placed you in by not being there, and you have to walk through the distance. We talked for over an hour on the doorstep through that little crack there until finally she opened the door and says, well, come on in.
You'll have to call this part the persistent suitor.
Well, that's one thing that did come to mind. I says, nothing ventured, nothing gained, you know. So then by the time we had arranged, and we had to find a restaurant just about the other side of the city, you know, so that we would be in a safe place. So it was getting towards evening already when we started driving. And of course, here I had my map in the middle of my steering wheel, watching every turn, and she was giving me the instructions. And then all of a sudden, the cars coming along there were honking their horns and flashing their lights. And Joanne says, I think they're trying to tell you should put your lights on. So that was another one of those crazy quirks that kept on happening with us. Well, we had a little bit of laughter about that. And then I got into the restaurant and started ordering, and somebody comes in from the outside and says, would the person with the Canadian license put out his lights because he might not have a battery anymore? So one thing. But I think that the marvel of it all was that in the situations that arose like that, we were able to share the kind of hilarity and, good feeling, for each other. And it seemed to have melted away all the reservations that had built up by that thing that I had done. Mm-hmm. And in the first place, and so at that time the French, there he is, the mosquito got away, and so through the week we met several times, and every time things turned around in such a way that, of course, again there I wasn't going to impose myself, so that toward the latter part of the week she hits us. Oh, we are getting married, aren't we? And I said, oh, yes, yes. And she didn't have a watch. She had said she couldn't tell the time there. So I says, hey, how about if I buy you a watch instead of an engagement ring? Because I had a wholesale catalog back home and I could get a better engagement ring for a cheaper price. So we agreed to that. And then towards the end of the week, she phoned back to her mother and says, Mom, guess what? I'm engaged. Well, and she said that we were going to be driving by her place there, in order to stop and visit, which we did, and had just a wonderful visit. I introduced myself and my friend to them. We talked for at least 2 hours together. And then we took off, and her mother got on the phone immediately, phoned Joanne back in Milwaukee and says, which one is it? I had forgotten to tell her that I was the one that was going to be engaged to her daughter, and there were the two of us, and there was no distinction between us.
Oh, your friend.
Me and my friend, and she didn't know which one was the one that was going to be engaged. And so when she heard, she was very much relieved, because the other person was really very quiet, and they didn't think that for their family. They were very, very open, and I've never, of course, in all my lifetime experience, found a family like that, which were so free and open in hilarity, mm-hmm. in being just being able to deal with things as they came along. Mm-hmm. You know, so, okay.
Can I join you after, can we do this after dinner?
Yes.
Yeah. That's the
I'll
plan.
Come right over here.
I'll find you at dinner.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, but I hope I
agree. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, nice to meet you. Yeah. And good to see you. Okay.
That's such an awesome story. Thank you for sharing that.
I tell the story because it gives flesh to what began here. Mm-hmm. You know, for her to be free enough to venture out into the world wherever it would take her and feel confident enough that she would be able to enter into that place and that moment and live out her life fully and meaningfully. And to give me also the courage to say, hey, you know, I come from the backwoods of Saskatchewan, but the place you came from really after Holden is really no longer the shaping influence, but what has happened here becomes the shaping influence that opens the world to you. And see what had happened then as a result of that. Well, there are a few more little quirks like this. So we agreed that that she would come and visit me in Winnipeg in a Thanksgiving, and I would have the ring ready, you know. And so Canadian Thanksgiving is the first week in October, so I was counting the days. And it was coming close to the weekend, and no word from Joanne, and I thought, did she get cold feet or something like that? So I phoned her, and she said, oh yeah, no, I'm coming. I'm coming on Thanksgiving. That's in November. So another flip and another adjustment. So then she came in November, dressed in winter clothes and mittens and scarf and boots, and arrived on, I think, one of the warmest Novembers we've had in Manitoba's history, and take her across the doorstep into the parsonage, and right alongside the door, the walkway is a rose, a red rose still in bloom. So it was her turn to make the adjustments. So it was those kinds of things, but what had happened. And then, of course, we got together. She finished her term till the end of December. And then we got together earlier in January, and we were married in February 9th, 1963. Now, what happened from there, I can tell sort of in a summarizing comment, is that the result of it all was that relationship opened up our worlds where borders or barriers were no longer obstacles, but something that we just went on with and never let them hinder our either our relationship or our life. So it really expanded our world into an arena that was as big as the continent, and there was nothing that was going to be there that would separate us. And in all of 43 years, I think, that we were married, there wasn't a time that she had ever given any kind of an indication that that she had regretted the choice that she had made. Mm-hmm. You know, and finally, when our three boys grew up, and she realized that this was going to be where they would be living, she decided that she would become a Canadian citizen. And you know, for U.S. people, that is a major, major step. Mm-hmm. So then when she went through all of that, the judge asked her, I says, do you have any problems about becoming Canadian citizen? She says, yes, just one. She says, I'm supposed to pledge allegiance to the Queen. What happens if there's another King Henry VIII? He was married 9 times. The judge, he hawed for about 3 minutes, and then he says, oh, you don't need to worry about that. That's a figurehead. You pledge allegiance to the ideal of a Christian monarchy. And that's what they're, you know, and this couple now displays, represents it. beautifully. Mm-hmm. So that's so it wasn't, you know, we weren't changing the values. We were just changing the systems within which the values were functioning. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, I made a commitment to her that I would visit her family every year that we lived, and we did that. And so we attended July the 4th at North Dakota there in the what's it called, the Black Forest, Black Hills.
Hills,
right? On the evening when they let the sun go down and they flashed the lights on those residents out on the there, and it was just a moving kind of thing, and we found inspiration, you know, from all those kinds of things that we had shared together, simply because we came together from different backgrounds, mm-hmm. but together in a commonality of faith and friendship, mm-hmm. but a little bit more, mm-hmm. as could be seen peeking out every once in a while. Yeah, so I think that kind of gives you a thumbnail sketch of. If you have any other questions that you'd want to address, I could possibly do that as well.
Well, I feel like you told me some great stories here, and the other questions that I've got prepared are more for the forerunner people and asking them about that process. So I feel great about this.
Good, good, good.
Wrap it up here.
Right, because with the forerunner's involvements, you see, the primary involvements we had was the forerunners, and it not only got the place and all the the facilities and the trails and everything in readiness for us, but they even planned them out and went with us in them, and that to us was such a treasure, mm-hmm. that it just opened up the whole time that we were here, and actually left, I think, an indelible impression. We had very little contact with Holden Village, primarily because of the distances. Mm-hmm. We tried to make arrangements to be here for the 25th anniversary, but we registered in March, beginning of March, and it was too late. So this is the one contact that we've been able to have. But I felt that I needed to come and tell Joanne's story because of her.
I really appreciate you doing that. This is it's really wonderful that you were able to share that with me. And with the village, this will be in the record.
Oh, wow.
So your story is a part of the village lore.
Okay. a little folklore is possibly all right.
Yeah, that's right. I think so. Well, that's great. Thank you so much, Bill. I really appreciate this.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad to be.
This is a really, really beautiful story.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.